From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Patterson, California.
I live in Richmond.
I live in Daly City, top of the hill, Daly City.
This hour, we're bringing you a special presentation from Capital Public Radio's The View From Here. Today, we'll hear about autism. Not autistic children, but the adults they become. Some work.
I'm detailing these cars, cleaning the windshields.
What do you like about working here?
To move around.
Others rely on family.
He can't do many things independently, but for the most part, I would say he likes to be alone.
Some seek relationships.
I used to be obsessed with the idea of marriage. Marriage to me meant normal. Then I realized there is no normal, there's just me.
Find out what happens when autism grows up. It's a special from Capital Public Radio presented by KALW News. Today we're bringing you a special presentation of The View From Here. It's a show on Capital Public Radio, and this episode is about autism in adulthood. Now I'll turn it over to Capital Public Radio's Beth Ruyak.
This is Autism Grows Up.
My name is Roland.
Roland Ricketts is 28. He lives with his mom and dad.
We're at my parents' house. My dad has health problems. My mom works at Lodi High School. Teacher.
Jackie Armstrong moved out of her parents' house and into an apartment 5 years ago.
My first month on my own, I was really worried that I was going to fail, that I was somehow going to get in trouble with everyone. But I flourished. Having Asperger's syndrome is a part of me. It does not define me.
20-year-old Freddie Topete barely speaks. His sister Monica hopes that special education will help develop his communication skills.
I worry about Freddie and the fact that I don't want him to get stuck in his room alone for the rest of his life, you know, because that is his comfort zone, being in his room alone with his toys and with his movies.
Steve Baxter bills himself as the world's first autistic stand-up comic.
I was born with autism. Like, I don't mind if people make fun of my autism, just as long as they do it in a friendly way.
Autism is a developmental disability with significant social, communication, and behavioral challenges. A generation ago, it was rare. In 1985, about 1 in 2,500 children were diagnosed. But in the 1990s, the autism rate began to climb, and by the year 2000, it was 1 in 150. Researchers say it wasn't just better parental education or better diagnoses. Studies have discovered environmental, biological, and genetic risk factors. It's now estimated that 1 in 88 children will be diagnosed with an autism spectrum disorder. Steve, Jackie, Freddie, and Roland led us into their lives. Capital Public Radio reporters visited their homes, talked with their families, spent time with them at work, school, and church. These are their stories. Roland Ricketts talked with reporter Pauline Bartolone.
Your parents tell me that you were diagnosed autistic. What do you think that means? How are you autistic?
I stammered when I was little.
Roland is a 28-year-old man, medium build, with long, light brown wavy hair, and he has thick glasses and a scruffy beard. He makes eye contact with you when you talk to him, and sometimes he has a smile on his face, kind of a grin like he's thinking about something funny but not telling you what the joke is. When I asked him, "How are you autistic?" he just said, "I stimmed when I was little." Stimming is self-stimulation. So whether it be flapping your hands or putting your fingers in front of your face, it's a way to shelter yourself from an overwhelming environment.
So you also work, right?
I work at the Auto Museum.
Do you like that job?
Yes, I do.
Where you guys head?
I don't know.
Get over there by the office. Start over there and get that whole section done right there. My name is Mario. I am the ETS, Employment Training Specialist. My first impression of Roland was kind of limited in what he can do. That wasn't the case. I don't have any problem leaving him alone. If I have him in there, I'm going to get the setup as far as the tables, chairs, and whatever. I'll review it with Roland, and then I'll leave him alone. I have confidence that it's going to get done.
Okay, then we're done.
What are you doing right now, Roland?
I'm detailing these cars, cleaning the windshields.
What other kind of tasks do you do here at the Auto Museum?
I vacuum, take out the trash, set stuff up, take stuff down for weddings, parties, and events. And we push cars too.
What do you like about working here?
To move around.
Each one of these guys can pretty much work independently. But for Roland, you'll notice sometimes he'll stop, he'll fixate or something like that. And then it's like he almost jump starts himself. In a sense, I don't look at Roland as being disabled. He's just a part of my crew. Maybe I lose sight of the fact that he is in a program. And his parents have expressed that type of attitude. They don't want me to pull any punches. They want him to be treated, I guess, like everybody else.
Can you tell me about some of the things that you're good at doing?
You know, mowing the lawn, washing dishes, folding clothes. Anything. Yeah, fixing computers.
What kind of things are hard for you to do?
Nothing. I do stuff that's hard. I figure it out.
Roland's parents taught him the importance of hard work. His dad is proud that his son holds a paying job. Jackie Armstrong works, too. It's a big part of her independent adult life. So is living on her own. Reporter Ben Adler visited her on a Wednesday when she demonstrated exactly what being independent means.
That's a large... Here you go. I'm washing my bathtub.
It's your regular Wednesday night routine, right?
Yeah, this is what I'm doing when I'm not out doing things or... You know, I try to clean up as much as I can. Ugh. Oh, out of the book. Hey, Julia?
Yes?
How would I get these orange spots out?
Oh, that's rust. You would probably have to use a...
Jackie is 27 years old. Like she has Asperger's. She lives on her own, but she can't do it alone. She has a job. She has a boyfriend. She has a social life. She cleans her own bathroom. But she can't drive. She doesn't use knives. She needs help remembering everything she needs to do, like taking pills. And that's why Julia and other assisted living staff help Jackie out. A few hours a day, more on weekends. Far less than they used to when Jackie first moved out about 7 years ago.
These are all my books for when I... When I read at night, right before I go to bed. So this has to do with the weight program I'm doing. This one was about a girl that has schizophrenia. This helps me with my confidence.
What is it?
I dated some people that weren't the best in the past. And so in between being single and meeting Dan, excuse me, getting with Dan, because I've known Dan for 3 years. I wrote out a list of all the things that are make me feel good as a person, you know, like, you are valued, you should be valued, that kind of thing. Just to remind myself on a bad day, if I'm sitting here, I'll read it to myself.
And you have Audrey on your wall.
Audrey Hepburn. A lot of my respite people that I had when I was younger. Respite is another way you have people come in and kind of hang out with you for a while. When you live at home, still gives you a break and gives your parents a break from each other. Their apartments, they all had Audrey, so I associated Audrey Hepburn with being independent. So when I got on my own, I just rushed around trying to find an Audrey Hepburn poster.
Every aspect of 20-year-old Freddie Topete's life seems to be defined by the severity of his autism. He's mostly nonverbal. It's almost impossible to know what he's thinking or feeling. Producer Julia Mitrich met with Freddie's special education teacher, who's helping him learn to express more of what he wants and needs. Here's Julia.
So Freddie's a tall, well-groomed, really nice-looking guy, but he doesn't make a lot of eye contact. As part of Freddie's transition program, they take a lot of these campus walks. And when it's Freddie's turn to lead, he just zooms ahead of the group. He's pretty much always separate from the group. So one of the things his teacher does to make him part of the group is talk to him, encourage him, talk to his classmates about him. And these are all ways that the teacher helps Freddie become part of the group, even though he's acting as if he's not part of the group.
Brianna, our first stop is going to be the bookstore, okay? And Freddie, can you lead us to the bookstore? I want you to be the leader. So Freddie, you're going to walk us to the bookstore. We'll follow you.
I'll do it, Victor. Go on.
Raphael, come walk with me. Because I want to make sure Freddie knows the way to the bookstore and can lead us there.
Mm-hmm. I'm Margot Fallon, and I have been working with Freddie since August 20th in the Community Transition Program on the Sac State campus. Our program focuses on helping students become as independent as possible as they transition into the adult world.
Okay, Raphael, I want you to slow down just a little bit, okay?
We are a program that is helping our students acclimate to the world around them. So sometimes they have to deal with things that are not comfortable for them, and it's a learning process, and they're learning how to cope with those feelings of anxiety or being uncomfortable just in everyday situations, and that won't bother a lot of people, but for our students it's a big deal.
Freddie, where's the bookstore? So now I'm not sure whether he's clear of what I want him to do, or if he's unsure of where the bookstore is, but there he goes. So I'm going to let him lead me to wherever he's going, and then we'll stop and we can talk about what's around us, and then we'll pick a new leader and start over again. Freddie, where are we going? Where? Do you need to go to the bathroom? Okay, so I think he just told me bathroom, and he's walking directly to the bathroom.
Freddie's got a really good sense of direction, and he had no trouble leading the group to the bookstore.
My name is Stephen Baxter, and we're at the Sacramento Mental Health Inpatient. It's open mic, and we do our routines and stuff like that in the spare conference room detached from the rest of the facility.
Steve is 52 years old. His standard garb is a turquoise windbreaker jacket and jeans. And he's a pretty articulate guy, but he definitely doesn't socialize the way other people do. He was diagnosed with autism only about 10 years ago.
How do you feel before you're about to go on stage?
I guess I'm calm about it.
You don't feel nervous or...
No, I don't.
Do you ever feel nervous or anxious?
All the time.
But not before you go on stage?
No. I guess because I'm used to doing it. Because I watch sitcoms on TV, and when I was a kid, I wanted to be a stand-up comic when I grew up. But I didn't start until 30 years ago.
Deep within my dream.
Give another round of applause to David. All right, everyone, let's welcome Stephen Baxter, the first stand-up autistic comic. Take it away, Stephen.
Oh, hi. My name is Steve Baxter. I'm a stand-up comedy kid. S-U-C-K, suck. My mom always said, if you keep on eating a half a gallon of ice cream a day, you'll balloon, and I don't mean up and away, with the fifth dimension. And you know that there are some motorcycles that say its name when they're speeding? They, like Suzuki. Suzuki! And Harley Davidson. Dips, 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 dips. That's right. Well, anyway, don't gas stoves make you sick? I mean... I'm the first autistic stand-up comic, and this is what fire looks like to us. The day you see me cook with a gas stove is the day you see Ralph Nader in a Chevy Corvair.
Before you got on stage, you said something to the MC. You told him to say something. What did you tell him to say?
Oh, yeah, the first autistic stand-up comic.
Why was that important to you, that he say that?
I guess so that people can understand me more. Know that I have a unique quality.
Steve's looking for friendship and love. Roland is earning his way. Jackie's happy with her independence. And Freddie will stay in school until he turns 22, when he ages out of services. Then it's up to Freddie, with the support of his family, to continue his transition to adulthood. You're listening to Autism Grows Up on The View From Here. I'm Beth Ruyak. You'll find full-length stories about the people featured in this program, plus videos, slideshows, and links to resources for navigating life with autism at capradio.org/view.
You're listening to a special presentation from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Now, back to Beth Ruyak.
From Capital Public Radio, this is Autism Grows Up on The View From Here.
So, Steve, I want to ask you a little bit more about how you describe autism to somebody who doesn't know what autism is.
I guess it's a disorder of the mind, of the brain. I don't know what to say as far as that. Well, anyway... It keeps you from doing things that other people can do. And when I went to a special school, there was this one carpool family who had a son that was couldn't talk, and his parents gave up on them. But not me. I passed that school and then went to a regular school and graduated with my class.
In what ways are you autistic?
Oh, yeah, well, I get upset easy, you know. I get paranoid, but I'm not a schizophrenic. Of course, my dad didn't get along with me very well, and neither did my mom until we moved in together. here in this apartment. But not my dad. He never got along with me.
Were you an only child?
I had a brother, 3 years younger. But he died.
Can you tell me a little bit about what your daily life is like here?
Well, I sometimes go to bed early, and even though I'm not working. And then sometimes I'm in bed until 9 in the morning, even though I've been awake for the past 2 hours before that. But I do volunteer work, though, even though I'm on SSI and I don't have a job that pays, which I'm glad, because I have a terrible time with working. Back in 1980, when I was 19, I was fired from 3 jobs. And that's when the welfare agency said you're eligible for benefits.
You said that you live independently.
And yeah.
That you consider yourself independent. What do you mean by that?
I mean, I pay my own bills. I eat my own food. I drive. And I know how to handle my own money.
And you volunteer?
Yeah.
You're interested in having more friends and more relationships. What kind of things do you think get in the way of that happening?
I guess it's because I live in my own world. I don't know how to socialize correctly. That's probably the main part of my autism is that. It's like, you know, they know about me, but I don't know about them.
Steve hasn't spent a lot of his life surrounded by family and friends. He lived in a boarding home for 15 years, and that was something his dad wanted him to do. About 10 years ago, Steve moved to Sacramento to live with his mother. And Steve says that his mom understood his autism better than anyone else. But a few years ago, she died.
Was that hard for you when she died?
No, but I guess that sounds selfish. Because it's normal to cry and grieve when your relative or friend dies. I understand that.
But you didn't cry?
No.
Did it affect you in other ways?
No. I was able to find a housemate that very same month. He goes to the same church as I do.
Do you feel sadness ever?
No.
You said you feel loneliness.
And that's because I'm looking for a girl.
Well, then we're talking about you. Is it okay?
Yeah, it's okay.
All right.
I'm Kat Ricketts, and I'm Roland's mother.
I'm Lex Ricketts, and I'm Roland's father. We were introduced to an intervention therapist, and she was heavy into the behaviorist mode. We were able to learn actual techniques to intervene and start retraining some of his behaviors.
He'd sit and rock and go like his fingers, waving them in front of his eyes.
About 3 inches.
I kept track of how many times a day he did it, and it was about 20-some times a day where he'd flick his fingers. So we decided that every time he did that, we would overcorrect it. And the idea was we take something that he was in control of and pleasant and make it unpleasant and take the control away. So whenever he'd stem, we'd go up and get in his face and say, no stemming, take his little arms and go over his head.
Jumping jack.
Yeah. And it didn't hurt, but it just wasn't fun.
It often looked like we were being very cold and stern.
We were afraid if we didn't do something, he'd be an adult with a helmet on his head, sitting and rocking, banging his head against the wall and doing that.
No, stop it. What day is this?
Tuesday.
Thank you. Good job. What day is this?
He's getting ready
right
there. Monday! That's right.
I tried!
Yes, you did try. You did it. Here, what day is this? What day is this?
There he goes.
Do you want chips?
No, we're not doing over. Yeah.
Then you have to work. What day is this?
No, there's not.
What day is this? What day is this? date? Nice hands. What day is this?
Sunday.
Thank you.
How old is he here?
Probably about six.
Eight. What do you want?
Trade, please.
What do you want to trade for? What do you want?
Chip.
Whole sentence, please.
I want a chip.
I want a chip.
All right, you may have a chip. What's the magic word?
Please.
Thank you.
Man,
hold that your
he's
hand.
Kind of harsh sometimes.
What?
Thank you.
Whoa.
Beat it up. We have more work to do.
Do you think that was effective, being harsh?
Is that good, Rowan?
Is
that a good chip?
Yeah.
Do you like chips?
Well, at the time, I thought it would break
What's
through the fog.
What's your favorite food?
I hope it was effective. Rowan? I mean, looking back now.
What's your favorite food?
Oh, my God.
But at least I didn't stay harsh. So.
No, you didn't.
Looking at those videos, Roland, what do you think about all those hours that you spent in that therapy?
I spent a lot of hours.
Yeah, do you think it's made a difference in your life?
Yes, it's made a difference.
How?
I saw how I looked down.
Yeah.
And it would have been different if it wasn't for you teaching me.
Well, we hope so. I mean...
Yeah.
It was.
Okay.
What do you remember about the therapy? Was it unpleasant when you were doing it? Or was it okay?
It was okay.
And how do you think your life would be different if you didn't get that therapy?
My life would have been different.
You're sort of echoing, son. Could you... Come up with your own words, okay?
Okay.
How would your life be different?
I would be institutionalized.
I don't know about that, son. I don't think your mother or I would have allowed that to happen. It just wouldn't be in the cards.
Wouldn't do that. What kinds of things would you not be able to do if you didn't have that?
You have a job. Go out, go be with my friends and all that stuff.
Hi, my name is Jackie Armstrong and this is my mom and dad, Helen and Mike Armstrong.
Start at the beginning with Jackie, what her life was like as you saw her grow up, and start there.
I think one of the first things I noticed is that she didn't move a lot. She would sit in the playroom in a sitting position as a toddler, you know, about 6 months old, and just sit there and play. The second thing I noticed is that she really never threw temper tantrums or got mad, and I said she's going to be so vulnerable and easily taken advantage of because she never gets angry. She's just so agreeable with everything.
Probably the first thing I noticed was her two older brothers and older sister didn't pound on her the way they did each other. And I found that different and odd, and it's as if they put a protective bubble. Bill, Charlie, and Alice just made us proud once we understood Jackie's diagnosis.
Then I enrolled her in kindergarten, and I got a call from the school district saying, oh no, she can't go to the regular kindergarten. We need to have her tested more. In fact, the kindergarten teacher said, well, she's like a mute child coming in. She really doesn't talk. by the time she finished 2 years in kindergarten and first grade or whatever the years were, she was reading beautifully. And so when her language really came about, I mean, it really developed beautifully. And I mean, you listen to her now, she's very verbal.
I make up for the speech I lost.
But all along the way, if there was a therapy for it, we had her in therapy for, you name it, we had it.
Auditory training, physical therapy, applied behavioral therapy. I was in horseback riding therapy, speech therapy.
So she went from autistic-like to PDD, and then the latest neurologist, when you were about 14, 12, he said Asperger's.
The other thing I wanted to mention is when she was about 8, and that's when I became aware and worried. And we already knew she was nice to a fault, but I worried what will happen to our daughter if and when she's out on her own. Will she be safe, and will people feel that they can take advantage of her? You know, with that, at 27 years old, we continue to be thrilled by her stories of everyday life and what she encounters.
I think a lot of it is the way I was raised. I mean, they never said, no, you can't. They said, let's see if you can do this. So I wasn't limited by what doctors told my parents to expect of me.
When Freddie was 1.5, his mom started noticing that he wasn't making eye contact. He wasn't playing with his sister, and after a while, she noticed he wasn't responding at all. When Freddie was about 2, he was diagnosed with autism. From there, Freddie's parents spent the next several years trying to find the right program for him. His sister Monica says it's been hugely important that Freddie's been in school all year long, every year since he was 3.
Hi, I'm Julia. Hi. So nice to meet you. Thank you both so much for making this happen. I know it's your weekend.
Hi, Freddie.
Hi, Freddie.
Say hi, Julia.
Hi, Julia.
Hi, Freddie. Nice to see you again.
My name is Monica Topete, and I'm studying at Sacramento State, and I'm 21 years old.
How would you describe your brother, Freddie?
He's clearly autistic. He's very low functioning, so that means that he can't do many things independently. He can't be left alone. As far as, you know, clothing himself, making food, things like that, he has not been able to do, at least so far. I feel like he can sense our emotions, even though he can't voice them. So I would say he's really loving, and he's really just a joy to be around, because it's like being around a happy 3-year-old all the time without the tantrums. There's just certain situations that he gets really uncomfortable in. So like crowds, anything where there's a lot of people, if there's a lot of noise. But most of the time, he's actually always happy.
And where do you feel like he feels the most comfortable?
Definitely in front of the television watching Disney movies. He loves Disney movies. He can recite back Disney movies. He can sing the songs. I mean, he doesn't really smile that much, just out in person and things like that. But when he's in front of that television watching like Aladdin or Jungle Book or Sound of Music, he's jumping up and down, you know, running through the halls because he's so happy and he likes to sing a lot. So definitely in his room is his comfort zone, watching Disney movies, and he has a lot of toys. But for the most part, I would say he likes to be alone, and he can tolerate us watching movies with him only for so long. But after a certain amount of time, he kind of wants us out of his room.
Freddie. Hi, Freddie.
Hi, Freddie.
Can we say hi?
Hi.
You want to show her some of your toys?
Thank you.
No, it's okay. Come here. It'll be real quick. Good. Thank you. So let's see. What is this? Is that from Sleeping Beauty?
Yeah. Will he get upset if we turn the static down?
Real quick,
so just
we can show Julia,
so
we can show her, so she can listen. So we're just gonna.
Okay. And then we'll put it back on.
Yeah, we'll put it back on. Here, Freddie, come over here. So let's keep showing her your toys.
Okay.
It's okay. Real quick.
Okay, that's okay.
Sorry.
That's fine.
Usually there's a movie going on, but. Here, Freddie, come here.
All right, would it help if we set up a movie?
Yeah, here, why don't you put in a movie then?
No, thank you.
Come here. He might try and ignore us now because he's a little upset. Okay. Let's do real quick. Come here, let's just show her these toys.
I love to see the toys.
All right. Look, this is what you got for Christmas, huh? What is this? A dragon.
Dragon.
So Freddie likes to keep all his toys together. Usually he has more down here, but Mom probably told him to clean up a little. But he keeps all the pirates together. It's okay, it's okay. You can go watch your movie then. I'll show Julia. Go on.
Okay, I need help.
No, it's okay. And then look, he likes to keep all his reptiles together over here. And then these are all the mounds and mounds of VHSs, as you could tell, that he keeps right next to the VHS player. So Freddie, why don't we put in Lilo and Stitch? Can we watch a little bit of Lilo and Stitch? Real quick.
Aww.
Real quick, come on.
Honey, how?
It's okay. Here, just for a little bit.
Okay.
Okay, then you play a movie, and we're going to go outside, and then we're going to come back in, and we're going to watch a movie, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Here's what was going on. Monica and I were hoping that we could sit and watch one of Freddie's favorite movies with him. That's his happy zone. But when we got in there and we turned down the white noise, Freddie got really upset. And he just got more and more upset. And at that point, it was sort of the way it is with a toddler where, you know, one moment everything's fine, the next moment you break the rules, you mess with their stuff, and they completely lose it. And your only option at that point is just to sit and weather the storm.
This is Autism Grows Up on The View from Here from Capital Public Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. You'll find photographs of everyone in this program, plus longer online stories giving you greater insight into the lives they lead. You'll also find links to autism resources and video profiles of people not featured in the show. It's all at our website, capradio.org/view.
You're listening to a special presentation from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Now, back to Beth Ruyak.
You're listening to The View from Here, Autism Grows Up, from Capital Public Radio.
This is Jackie Armstrong, and we're at Pride Industries. It's a job center for adults that have disabilities to get a chance to work. We're about to go in the electronics section, specifically the medical business unit area.
And what are you making here?
I'm making the game ready inside unit, the inside of it.
And what's the game ready?
It's a system for people that hurt their joints or something or had surgery. They put it on their joints and it pumps cold water through and it goes like a cuff on their joints and then it heals quicker than a cold pack apparently. It looks kind of like a lunchbox, only it's got electronic things in it. So here's the air pump. Here's a tie gun. Make sure it's at 6. When I was younger, a lot of people didn't think that I would be as far as I am. I had to do a lot of therapy because I would interrupt people a lot. And I would talk all the time. I would polarize other people's conversations and stuff. Working here, I found my niche because I know I do it well here. Whereas if I was at Taco Bell pushing a broom, it would be too stimulating, number one, and customers would be always coming in and trying to say stuff. So this is It's like I wake up and I look forward to coming here.
Jackie didn't just find her niche at Pride. She found her boyfriend, too. And his name's Danny.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
All right.
I'm Ben.
Ben?
It's nice to meet you, Danny.
Hey.
Jackie tell you why I'm here?
No.
Oh, yeah. It was so short notice, I didn't really tell a lot of people about it. He's from the radio, and he was interviewing me about having autism and stuff, and so I told him a bit about my life. You came up, and so I was like, well, you want to see what he looks like? So.
I actually introduced myself like, hi, my name is Barf. I'm a Mog, half man, half dog. I'm my own best friend.
That's how he introduced himself to me. And so I didn't know what his name was. I thought his name was Barf.
From Spaceballs, right?
Yeah.
And it worked.
That's fun.
Does my autism make it any harder to date me?
I don't think so.
Cool.
Correct answer.
At the after work today, then.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
I used to be obsessed with the idea of marriage. Marriage to me meant normal. Then I realized there is no normal, there's just me. So I kind of just evolved from that. And I've become a lot happier through that. It doesn't make Danny and I any less of a couple. It's just like, we're happy. I like my space, though.
I wasn't really raised with a strong religion. But my mom came from a Jewish family. My dad came from an Episcopalian Christian family.
Were you living with your mom when you found this church?
Yes, just moved in.
Jason Binzi, pastor of Lutheran Church of Our Redeemer in Sacramento. Steve is very faithful. If he says he's going to be here at 11 o'clock, he never fails to be here at 11 o'clock. And Steve is very good with numbers, recalling someone's birth date or a date an event occurred. He is excellent in helping as a counter of offerings on Sunday mornings. Steve has really grown and aims to work at his social skills, relating socially. And by Steve's witness, he's allowed others to feel welcome here. And because of it, we've had some others on the autism spectrum that have been worshiping here more recently.
The boundless grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, the wisdom of God, and the light of the Holy Spirit be with you all.
And also with you.
So, Steve, what are you doing right now?
Oh, yeah, I'm folding the bulletins that we use on the Sunday service.
How long have you been coming to this church?
10 years.
How did you first find out about it?
I was taking a walk, and I figured, it's in the neighborhood, so I might as well give this a try.
Really?
That's right. And luckily, it was the same synod as the one I went to in San Jose. I guess I wasn't making friends at other churches, even though I tried.
So, how do you describe this kind of Lutheranism?
Friendly and liberal.
What kind of things do you think the general public need to know about autistic adults?
That we've come a far way, a long way, to finally maybe be recognized. So they'll know more about it and not. See, I was not diagnosed as autistic back when I was in San Jose, when I was in my 20s and 30s. They considered me a paranoid schizophrenic, those narrow-minded staff of the mental health. But that was over there.
Do you think it's helpful to have scientific studies to look into the causes of autism?
Actually, I don't know anything about that.
But do you think that it's important that people do that research and science around the causes of autism?
If they want.
Freddie absolutely loves French fries. And that's how his sister, his mom, his teachers, that's how they help Freddie get through the day. French fries are the motivation to get through every activity, to get through all the obstacles, to get his French fries. So Freddie's teacher, Margot, is trying to help Freddie expand his communication. So she started with really simple yes or no questions, things that she knows the answers to. So, do you have a pet at home? Do you have a sister? From there, Margot's moved to questions that require a simple choice. Do you want onions or salad for lunch? Do you want to go shopping or bowling? Ideally, she would like him to be able to say, yes, I want that. Or no, that's not okay.
Freddie, do you want to get French fries?
Yeah.
They're in here.
Oh.
Do you remember?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Okay, come on. So when they ask you what you want, what do you tell them? Yeah, you have to say it loud so they can hear you, okay?
I want soda. Soda.
You want what?
Soda.
Soda?
Yeah.
Well, you can have one. Which one do you want? French fries or soda?
Oh, soda. Yeah.
You want soda?
Yes.
See where that guy in the hat is? You take this? What kind of soda do you like?
Yes. Soda?
Do you like yes. Pepsi?
Pepsi.
Or Dr. Pepper?
Dr. Pepper. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mountain Dew?
Mountain Dew? Yes.
I like
Jack.
And when they ask you what you like, you say, I want a...
Pepsi.
Pepsi. Good job. Okay, walk up to the window.
Hi. This is soda? Whose is this?
I want soda.
You want a Pepsi?
Okay.
So it's $1 and I took your $1, okay? And I'll give you a receipt for it. Thank you. And there's your Pepsi, okay? Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you.
So many people take care of their autistic adult or their autistic child. No, I don't know what we do without Roland.
Roland takes care of us.
I mean, Lex has neuropathy because of his diabetes. It gets very painful. Roland rubs his dad's legs almost every night.
I am very proud of my son. Wherever he goes, people appreciate him. And he's this sort of quiet guy who isn't afraid to invest himself in helping. I mean, he's always there with a hand. And after that happens to you a few times where he just volunteers to help, it impresses you.
The next stop will be 39th Street.
So there are a lot of ways that Roland is independent right now. He can cook for himself. He has a lot of hobbies. He loves going to the gym. He goes to the gym as much as he can. He loves scuba diving. And he also can navigate the public transportation system really well on his own. Every day he commutes almost 2 hours each way to work at the auto museum. And one day I actually went to the auto museum and I rode home with him on the light rail and waited with him at the bus stop.
How do you describe autism?
STEM.
It's dimming.
And I'm pretty high functioning. The bus is coming.
So, do you get along with your parents?
Yes.
Do you like living with them?
Yes. I live with my parents until I'm 35.
Why 35?
Oh, but they like having me in their lives.
Do you like having them in your life?
Yes.
Is this your bus?
Yes.
Roland, Freddie, Steve, and Jackie are part of the first wave of people to grow up with autism. They and their families have lived through misdiagnoses, experimented with therapies, and struggled to find services. As adults, these four are facing the same challenges as everyone else, on or off the autism spectrum, from work to relationships to becoming more independent. The real question may not be whether they're ready for the adult world, but whether the adult world is ready for them. The View from Here is a production of Capital Public Radio in Sacramento. Thanks to Freddie Tapete, Steve Baxter, Jackie Armstrong, Roland Ricketts, and their families, teachers, and supporters for letting us into their lives. Additional thanks to the UC Davis Mind Institute, the Autism Self-Advocacy Network, Sacramento Autism Spectrum and Special Needs Alliance, Warmline Family Resource Center, and Alta Regional Center. Executive producer of The View From Here is Joe Barr. Autism Grows Up was reported by Ben Adler, Julia Mitrich, and Pauline Bartolone, with multimedia producer Andrew Nixon. The senior editor is Alan Ray. Digital content manager Al Gibbs. Web designer Veronica Nagy. Production assistants Brandon Marshall and Caitlin Bain. Music by Scott Collard and Joe Gilman. This program is funded in part by the California Endowment, California Healthcare Foundation, and Sierra Health Foundation. Go to capradio.org/view for complete program content, including videos, photographs, web stories, and resource links. Let us know what you think. Share your stories about living with autism. That's capradio.org/view. Autism Grows Up was produced by Catherine Stifter and Paul Conley. I'm Beth Ruyak. Thanks for listening to The View from Here.
This was a special presentation from KALW News. It's also online at kalw.org. I'm Hannah Baba. Thanks for listening.